Welcome to the Nuance Mid-Cap Value Semi-Annual Call. My name is Christine, and I will be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to Paul Gillespie, Vice President and Client Portfolio Manager at Nuance Investments. You may begin.
Thanks, Christine, and good afternoon, everyone. As Christine mentioned, this is Paul Gillespie, Vice President, Client Portfolio Manager at Nuance Investments. I want to thank everyone for joining us today for our Nuance Mid-Cap Value Semi-Annual Update Call. In the email invitation to today's call, there was a link to a presentation that we will be referring to during the call. For any reason, if you do not have the presentation, you can email us at client.services@nuanceinvestments.com, and we will email it over. Before we begin the discussion today, I do want to let you know that this presentation may include statements regarding the intent, belief, or current expectations of our portfolio management team. Actual results may differ materially from such forward-looking statements due to a number of factors, including changes in general economic conditions, market liquidity, market volatility, and other market, financial, or governmental uncertainties. During the call today, we'll be giving an update on the firm and team. We will also go through a summary of the investment process and updated performance. We will conclude our prepared remarks with a review of what's happened so far in 2018 and a discussion on our mid-year 2018 outlook. We will then open up the call for questions. With that, I'll turn the call over to Scott Moore, our President and Chief Investment Officer. Scott?
Thanks, Paul, and thanks to everyone for joining us today. As Paul alluded to, if you'll turn to page 2 of the presentation, you can see the agenda for our call. Again, first, we'll provide an update on the firm and our team. Then we'll provide a quick review of the first half of 2018 and, of course, spend quite a bit of time on some going forward color outlook, some opportunities and some risks that we're seeing as we navigate these markets today. On page 3 is a short summary of Nuance as a firm. From our seed capital in 2008 of $30 million, our firm has grown today to manage a little over $2 billion, almost closing in on $2.1 billion using our classic value investment approach. As you know, we have three products: our mid-cap value strategy, which of course is the focus today, where we now manage about $1.1 billion, our concentrated value strategy, which is in the process of closing to new clients at $1 billion, and our youngest, most junior product, our Nuance Concentrated Long-Short Strategy. Each of our products is capacity constrained to position Nuance and its clients for future returns. We believe staying relatively small, having the nimbleness to continue to invest in the smaller companies, in the smaller mid-cap companies that we've been able to over the years, is critical to the long-term risk-adjusted performance of our clients. On page 4, you can see our investment team with roughly 70 cumulative years of experience between us. Importantly, this has been a very stable group who largely grew up on the Nuance investment process and has seen cycles starting from the Nifty 50 and tech boom of the mid to late 90s, the subsequent tech bust, the commodity and finance booms and levered finance world of the mid-2000s, and of course, the financial crisis. And then following that, the last 9 years of relatively slow but steady economic growth. Our goal clearly for our clients is to keep this group of folks stable and cohesive for many years to come, so our clients can continue to gain the confidence and trust in our expertise and the depth of our knowledge as we navigate stock by stock these markets. On page 5, you can see a single-page schematic of our Nuance investment process. The process has not changed since the inception of Nuance, and you can be assured it won't. I always mention this in all of these calls because consistency of process, to me, is critical not only to execution and long-term performance, but also our clients' ability to understand what we're doing in all of these market environments. The bigger picture summary of our process is that Nuance is a bottoms-up, one-stock-at-a-time investment firm searching for leading business franchises that we define as having number one or number two market share positions with sustainable competitive advantages We perform in-depth financial analysis on those companies that we've identified that have those competitive advantages that results in a mid-cycle or normalized set of financial statements for each of those companies. With this mid-cycle set of proprietary estimates of earnings, EBITDA, cash flows, dividends, etc., we then perform a rather extensive valuation study on each of the businesses. That study emphasizes a mid-cycle fair value and a true recession-like trough value estimate for each company, with the end goal being a group of nearly 250 leading business franchises, all with sustainable competitive positions and relatively clear and rational fair value and trough value estimates. With that information, we can then monitor and invest in what we believe to be the very best risk rewards across the investing landscape and optimize your firm or your family's risk rewards on a daily basis. So why is our process different? We get that question quite a bit. A couple of things, just big picture. We believe we are more diligent than most in our competitive work. We take great pride in identifying potential competitive transitions. Secondly, we believe our mid-cycle estimate process is a more logical way to determine the best denominators for calculating valuations as opposed to trailing 12 months or 1 or 2 year going forward estimates, which are oftentimes very wrong. And then finally, our equal emphasis on fair and trough values, we believe, gives us a clear vision of both risk and reward. We believe that combination has led to better than average returns with less than average risk versus our peers and our benchmarks since our inception. So with that backdrop, how has the first 6 months of 2018 gone? And how has our performance been over the long term? Turning to page 6 of your presentation book, the first 6 months of 2018 broadly has been a pretty classic late cycle market environment. Valuations today are simply not a focus of today's marketplace, in our opinion. Where returns are coming from these days is actually a pretty narrow place. And leverage at the corporate level and even at the government level is considered to be a plus as opposed to a minus, which obviously is something that in late cycles can lead to some unfortunate circumstances later on. Given this environment, you might expect us to struggle a bit. As we talk to most of the clients on this call, late cycle environments are actually kind of the opposite of what we're focused on. High quality companies, valuation focused with less than average leverage. So given this environment, you might expect us to struggle. Indeed, we have underperformed just a bit with our mid-cap value product down 0.86% net of fees versus our primary benchmark down 0.16%. So roughly in line this year, which is modestly disappointing, but not really unexpected. Fortunately, our stock selection has really offset this macro environment that we really have seen over the past 12 to 18 months. So we're pleased that that result is has been what it is, as opposed to the kind of those bigger picture phenomenons resulting in underperformance. So we're pleased with that result. Positives for this period include stocks within the industrial, the water utility, and some of the material stocks. A couple of examples were Lindsay Corporation, Abaxis, SJW Group, Aptar Group, and others. These were offset largely by our underweight in energy, which hurt us this year and helped last, and our consumer staples overweight, particularly our holdings in Sanderson, which I'll talk more about in a few minutes. Turning your attention to the bottom chart of page 6, with 2018 still as a pending year, you can see we have outperformed our primary benchmark 8 of our first 10 years here at Nuance Investments, assuming you include our stub year of 2008, at 4-7 out of 9 years if you don't include that stub year. As for the long-term since inception numbers, as we approach that 10th anniversary here at the firm, we are pleased with our since inception net of fees performance of 15.76% versus the Russell mid-cap value of 14.3% and the S&P 500 at about 13.7%. Lastly, on longer-term performance, if you'll turn to page 7, you can see we are 6th percentile versus the Morningstar Midcap Value Peer Group and 7th percentile versus the Lipper Midcap Value Peer Group on a raw performance basis. Importantly to us, and I know to the vast majority of our clients, if you look at the middle data column on page 7, which is our standard deviation of those returns, which is our internal way we measure our risk versus our peers. We are among the least risky products as measured by standard deviation, and we're pleased with those results. If you put those two numbers together into a Sharpe or risk-adjusted return ratio, which has always been our firm's primary performance bogey, that yields a ranking of first percentile versus all of our peer groups since the inception in October, November of 2008. The biggest topic of the day and our final topic for today, it'll take me a little while, I'm going to spend a little more time on it than normal, is our 2018 outlook. And you can turn to page 9 to see those details. I think we'll start with the opportunity set that we're seeing. The most recent opportunity begins showing up in the latter stages of 2017 as an above average level of catastrophes. Think about the hurricanes in Houston and in the Caribbean, the fires in California has resulted in some significant earnings erosion or under earnings across a lot of the property and casualty insurance world. And stock underperformance in that space has led to some new opportunities. Today, we're able to buy shares in a leading business franchise like the Travelers Companies, ticker symbol TRV, the leading U.S. small and mid-sized commercial P&C underwriter at about 11 to 12 times our normalized earnings. We also believe we've got an opportunity in Everest Re, a very good company, very high-quality balance sheet, representing an attractive opportunity today as this North American reinsurer is trading at about 10 times our internally derived normalized earnings. Both of these companies have strong market share positions, outstanding balance sheets versus their peers, and are under-earning their long-term potential due to the transitory issues that we discussed a minute ago. The PE multiples are very, very attractive versus our entire universe of 250 leading business franchises that we've been tracking for quite some time. That entire group, and we'll allude to this a little bit more when we talk about the risks that we're seeing across the marketplace, our entire group of leaders is trading at 24 to 25 times our view of their normalized earnings. So you can see some of these property and casualty insurance companies are looking very attractive relative to many, if not most, of the names that we've been tracking for all of these years. The second opportunity that I would allude to would be in a little bit away from one stock at a time is avoiding competitive transitions. One of today's biggest opportunities is avoiding mature businesses that are being attacked by technology and new technological capabilities. As we are now about 10 years into this product's life, and I am personally running at 25 to 30 years of working in this classic value investing world, we are seeing, and I am seeing, a clear acceleration in competitive transitions, and that's really taken place over the last couple of years. In the last year, we have written a lot about oil in particular. We've written about middlemen like distribution companies being attacked by the likes of Amazon. And I could go kind of on and on about the various places where we're seeing disruption occurring from a competitive perspective. We are quite excited about this acceleration in competitive transitions as it plays into nuances and our processes strengths quite well. Historically identified transitions at Nuance include the telecommunications sector in the late 90s, early 2000s, the newspaper industry in the early 2000s, the ATM money exchange sub-industry kind of around 2009, 10, and 11, the retail industry in general, the paper industry a long time ago, the coal industry, and many others. Avoiding these industries and the potential value traps that typically result is a key part of our own process's competitive advantage versus our peers and benchmarks. So that acceleration of these transitions, we think, bodes well versus our peers and benchmarks over the next 5, 10, and 15 years. The last opportunity is really our bread and butter, and that is one-off stocks that we always can find through time, although I would suggest to all of our clients that they are certainly a lot less one-off stocks than we normally see in this late cycle market environment. A company like Dentsply, ticker symbol XRAY, we call it X-Ray, a leading supplier of dental equipment. Trailing 12-month earnings kind of in the low twos. Our normal earnings power is in the high twos. The primary cause of their under-earnings is a disruption at the dental distribution companies that are being attacked by Amazon specifically. This has caused some destocking at those distributors and a short-term lull in revenue growth for this particular leader. With an excellent balance sheet and a recent stock price in the low to mid-40s, we're able to accumulate and add to our positions at 15 to 16 times PE multiples, that compared to that nuanced market of 24 to 25 times, appears to be an excellent risk reward of a very high quality company from our perspective. The other example I would give of a one-off stock is Sanderson, ticker symbol SAFM, a leading and low-cost provider of poultry products in the Southeast. Recent spikes of feed costs, along with some price fixing concerns in the industry, which, by the way, are normal and occur all the time over the decades of this protein-related sub-industry. Those combination of those two things has resulted in earnings being under pressure. Declining earnings in these late-cycle environments is not appreciated at all. Valuations aren't really appreciated very much. So that is earnings pressure, we believe, is allowing for an excellent risk-reward in this space. The entire poultry sub-industry is under pressure because of these phenomenons, not just Sanderson. Sanderson is just our favorite company in stock within the space. The company has net cash on the balance sheet, earning about $8 or so today, with our normalized earnings power being closer to 10, trading at about $100. We are buying this very well-positioned protein provider in a protein that's been gaining market share versus packaged foods as well as other proteins. And Sanderson is a leader in that space. We're able to buy the company at 10 times unlevered earnings. Excellent risk reward, particularly versus this marketplace that we believe is pretty significantly overvalued as a broad group of companies. So pretty excited about the Sanderson risk reward today. The bottom line is that the opportunity set has become very narrow. We talked about that 6 months ago on our last call, and it continues to be that way. Upside potential is limited, but there certainly are some pockets of risk reward that we like quite a bit. So the last thing I want to talk about today is the risks that we're seeing in the marketplace. Usually this is not really the longest part of my presentation, but in these late cycles, I need to spend a little extra time for our clients so that you understand our perspective. There are really three traits over my career that late cycles that have occurred and that we have seen and observed during late cycles. First, valuations generally are underappreciated. Second, a narrowness of performance persists through these late cycles. And then finally and lastly, we see leverage being loved by the marketplace rather than the leverage being considered risky and people understanding the downside potential of stocks due to leverage. That whole phenomenon gets ignored. I wrote a lot about this in the semi-annual commentary that you can view on our website. So I'm going to give you kind of some overview of what I wrote, but I would encourage you guys to head out and read the whole story that I wrote about here in the last couple of weeks. So let's take these traits one at a time. The first one, valuation is not a focus of the market in general today. Again, this is my opinion. First, for some perspective, our nuanced master list of 250 leading business franchises has a mid-cycle normalized earnings PE ratio that has ranged from 9 to 10 times. We saw that data point in March of 2009. To a historically high level of 24 to 25 times, and we are seeing that level today. I think that's pretty self-explanatory, and it's a clear risk that exists out there today. Just simple valuation compression is definitely a risk in the marketplace, in our opinion. As one example, a company like One Gas Inc., ticker symbol is OGS, we have owned it recently. In the product, recently finished it off and sold it out completely at a normal earnings per share level in the low threes. The PE ratio for OGS is in the low to mid 20s. That is a historically within a range, high level on really any measure I've seen. And the broad range of valuations for this company has been 10 to 13 times at the low and 20 to 25 times at the highs, which again, that's where we are today. This all for a pretty slow-growing Oklahoma-based natural gas utility with a leveraged balance sheet and only high single-digit ROAs, think 8%, which is pretty low and barely reflects them earning their cost of capital. The important point here is that OGS is just one example of a broad-based valuation issue that appears to be either being ignored or misunderstood by many, as much of today's rhetoric and discussions surround things like FANG stocks and politics. Those things are opportunities for us, I believe, that diligently study one stock at a time and don't put added emphasis on what I would lovingly call popular stocks when we realize all of these leaders have great traits and we want to buy them when they're attractive. The second trait of late cycles is that the market is very narrow and the general sentiment is investing is pretty easy. And all you need to do is put your money in those narrow pockets of performance and you're going to be just fine. Narrowness of performance proliferates today in the technology sector, as well as the, in my opinion, the oddly named FANG stocks, of course, and also to a degree in some of the consumer cyclical areas, a particularly troubling space for us because there's so much competitive transition within that particular industry. From, just to give you a couple of numbers, from 12/31 of 2016 to 6/30 of 2018, so the last 18 months, the S&P 500 is up 25.05%. The Russell Midcap Value Index, our primary index for this product, is up 13.13%, and the New York Stock Exchange FANG Plus Index is up a pretty impressive 104.76%. From a couple of sector perspectives, the S&P 500 Information Technology Sector GICS Level 1 Index, that was a mouthful, is up 53.92%, and the S&P 500 Consumer Discretionary World is up 37%. I think all of you from those data points would suggest that I'm probably correct in my assessment that this is a very narrow market. We might remind all of our clients what happened to the late cycle, quote, easy places to put your money post the late 1990s and, of course, post the mid-2000s, the 2005-2006 period. And I can assure you the spaces where it was easy to invest didn't turn out all of that well. Certainly doesn't guarantee that's going to happen this time, but there are certainly traits here that are suggesting there is an issue that is pretty classic to most late cycle periods. The final trait of late cycles is one I've been writing about now for at least the last year or so. Leverage is oddly loved during late cycles. Sometimes it feels like the market just simply forgets that most market crisis moments were created on the back of pull forward demand using leverage at outsized levels. All you have to do is just look back into the 05, 06, 07 mega cap bank world and see they were as levered as they've ever been. Horrible lending standards, pulled forward demand, and that led to an awful, awful financial crisis. Today, corporations ex finance and ex utilities are heavily levered versus their history. Net debt to EBITDA by our math alone, running from 1.5 to 2 times generally, and now those numbers are kind of up in the 2.5 to 3 times levels more broadly. That's a red flag. That is a sign that we are seeing pull forward of demand due to leverage. The U.S. government is more levered than at any time in their history. I think many of us are seeing state-by-state struggles in general with leverage. And, of course, if you study the rest of the world's leverage, you also see a great many very big, very large, very important countries near peak levels of leverage. I won't go into more details on this call due to timing issues, but suffice to say we have a great deal of experience here at Nuance in seeing the volatility of security prices when leverage is part of the issue during any negative news period. you might all consider looking at Diebold Corporation, ticker symbol DBD's chart, as a recent downturn in earnings coupled with a stark competitive problem that we have talked to most of our clients about over the last 5, 6, 7 years has caused them to have to discuss debt covenant issues with the market. Diebold might just be a strong message to the leveraged community out there of what happens when all just doesn't go right with the company. And we should all remember that even the best companies have issues and don't do well all the time. And an outsized amount of leverage exacerbates those issues at a very significant level. Our job is to avoid that for our clients so we maintain that long-term focus on risk-adjusted returns one stock at a time. In conclusion, overvaluation coupled with leverage is probably, in my opinion, it is the largest risk in today's market. And much like the late 90s and the mid-2000s, the world seems to have forgotten just how much downside more leveraged stocks can have. Our portfolio is positioned well with leaders with good balance sheets that we believe can do quite well in any market environment. And we are quite excited about the spread between the risk reward of our portfolio for mid-cap value versus that of the market opportunity risk reward because of that phenomenon and many others. Thank you all for your continued confidence and support. I can't tell you how much we appreciate it here as a team. And with that, I will conclude my comments and open it up to any questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press star, then one on your touch-tone phone. If you are using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star, one on your phone now. I'll stand by for questions. I'm showing no questions at this time.
Thanks, Christine. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today for our Mid-Cap Value semi-annual call. As a reminder, for more information about Nuance and to stay up to date on our investment strategies, please visit our website. That concludes the call today. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.